Bring the meeting to order, please. Can I have a roll call?
Kurt Olsted.
Here.
Tracy Carluccio.
Here.
Tim Daugherty. Michael Dressler. Michael Francis. Robert Holtaway.
Here.
Bruce James. Carl Richko.
Here.
Jim Riley.
Here.
Michael Sevetich.
Here.
Michael T. Fink.
Here.
James Vizioli.
Here.
Richard Bowden. Robert Walsh.
Here.
Please read the open public meeting statement.
This meeting is being held in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. The Highlands Council sent written notice of the time, date, and location of this meeting to pertinent newspapers throughout the state and posted notice on the Highlands Council website.
Thank you. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item of business is approval of minutes. The regular August 21st minute.
So moved.
Second.
Motion to second. Any discussion? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Councilmember Alston.
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio.
Yes.
Councilmember Daugherty. Councilmember Dressler. Councilmember Francis. Councilmember Holtaway.
Aye.
Councilmember James. Councilmember Richko.
Yes.
Councilmember Sevetich.
Yes.
Councilmember T. Fang.
Abstain.
Councilmember Vizioli.
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden. Councilmember Walton.
Yes.
Chairman Riley.
Yes. Next item is approval of the executive session minutes for August 21st. Can I get a motion, please?
I move that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Get a second.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? See a none. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Alston.
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio.
Yes.
Councilmember Daugherty. Councilmember Dressler. Councilmember Francis. Councilmember Holtaway.
Aye.
Councilmember James. Councilmember Richko.
Yes.
Councilmember Sevetich.
Yes.
Councilmember T. Fang.
Staying on that.
Councilmember Vizioli.
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden. Councilmember Walton.
Yes.
Chairman Riley.
I'll abstain.
I can only
say yes to the portion that I was here for.
Right.
Hold on a second. Oh, you had to abstain too.
You can review the minutes and approve. If you choose to abstain, we can carry them to the next meeting.
Just because you were at the last meeting of the minutes doesn't mean you can't vote yes or no on them if you've read the minutes.
Excuse me, Council Member Daugherty is just voting
in. The issue may be moved. Yes.
Mr.
Daugherty, we're in the process. I'm looking for for approval of the executive session minutes at the last meeting. And I think your name is just being called right now.
Okay.
Council Member Daugherty.
Yes.
Thank you. That brings us to the chairman's report. I have nothing this evening. I had a rename of the committee, but we'll get to it shortly. Ms. Dorsey.
Okay. The first item I'd like to report out on as part of my acting executive director's report is Fenimore. As of September 4th, 23,000 cubic yards of the total 75,000 cubic yards of clean fill has been brought to the site. The DEP expects that 45,000 cubic yards of the 75,000 cubic yards will be brought onto the site by the end of the month. As of Monday, the first layer of the multi-layered cap has started to be placed. And next Monday, the impermeable liner of the cap will begin to be placed. And that is all the information I have to update you. I will say that I think we sent you all an email, but in case you missed it, the web portal is now open. It opened Monday afternoon. As of this morning, we have gotten 11 comments from 9 distinct sources. For petition approval, Boonton Township had been deemed administratively complete September 4th. We think that they might be ready to come in for the January meeting. That's just kind of penciled in, but we expect them in fairly soon. And Tuesday night, Chester Borough adopt their petition ordinance, so we will be seeing them as well. For plan conformance implementation, in Vernon Township, the Highlands Land Use Ordinance was adopted and deemed consistent by the Highlands Council. The zoning maps amendments were adopted by the municipality and also deemed consistent by the Highlands Council. The Highlands Exemption Ordinance and exemption designees approved and were certified. And on our consultants, I wanted to point out, which is also in the report, that Courtney Mercer is the principal of Mercer Planning Associates, which is currently a named consultant on three Highlands Council contracts: the municipal fiscal analysis of potential municipal transfer development rights receiving zones, the Highlands Regional Master Plan Monitoring Program Recommendation Report, and the RMP Fiscal Impact Assessment. Recently, she also became the New Jersey Director of the Regional Plan Association, in addition to maintaining her role at Mercer. This change results in minor adjustments to the named consultants on two of these contracts. With regard to the MPRR work, Mercer will no longer be named subcontractor, and on the RMP Fiscal Impact Assessment, the subcontractor will now be RPA instead of Mercer. Please note, because this is the important part, the individuals doing the work have not changed, only organizational names have changed. And the last item I have is actually something that's quite we're happy about. We welcome Jocelyn Bishop as our newest employee and a full-time GIS specialist. Her start day was September 8th, and if that wasn't exciting enough, she is to be married shortly. So we offer her our congratulations, both for joining the staff and for your wedding. So nice to have you aboard.
Welcome, Jocelyn.
And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Nordstrom. Any other members have any new business before we move into reports?
Sorry, just got to check them.
It's not my report.
A reminder for everybody to
turn yourself on.
All right, seeing none, the first item up under committee reports is the HDC Bank Committee. Prior to Mr. Walton reporting out on this, there's a confusion with this committee, the name, and I think it's also taken on some other responsibilities, as you'll hear more about in due time. But we're now going to call this the Landowner Equity and Preservation Committee. They will continue to do the same job that they have been doing in reference to HDCs, as well as some other property acquisition and landowner equities type services. So, Mr. Walton, would you like to report out on this?
Yes, I apologize for not being present. I hope everyone can hear me. I'm in West Virginia, but I'd rather be in Chester, I assure you. Three things that we discussed in the meeting. The first is we went over the agreement for the power line money, the PSE&G money, and so no one is under any doubt. We are allowed to use that money for open space acquisition. It does not need to be used just for properties adjacent to or in the line of sight of pipeline of the power line. It can be used for any open space acquisition anywhere in the Highlands. The second point we discussed was the open space purchasing program. Every member of council will receive sometime mid-November a copy of the open space policy, our open space application, and the internal documents we will use to assess open space applications, with the open expectation that at the December meeting, we will approve the open space program. We then spent the rest of the meeting discussing landowner compensation. And there are three vehicles that we discussed for landowner compensation. The first is the bank board and TDC credits. And that program will renew again with a new format and a new process that is not based on hardship, but is based upon the value of the land, similar to the open space criteria. Those credits are valued at $16,000. We discussed at Brent Lang how that figure was arrived at $16,000. At the beginning of the Highlands process, there was a study that valued the credit at $64,000. Council made a policy choice to offer $16,000 in the hopes that there would be, through the TDR program, a market for those credits at a higher value. If the council was buying the credits at $64,000, no private investor would buy them for $64,000. So council long ago decided to make that value, that offer value from council, $16,000 as a minimum. You are certainly free, when the TDR program is up and running, sure to get up and running successfully, to sell TD credits in the open market at whatever price they will fetch. But if you're wanting to come to council as your last resort, the council's offering $16,000. We can certainly revisit that as a council. If you want to offer more, we can. If you want to offer less, we can. But that was a policy choice by council to offer that purchase price. The other way you get compensation is by selling your land as open space. And you can do that by approaching either a county, a town, or a land use, a not-for-profit, who can then partner with the Highlands to buy your land as open space, either as a fee simple purchase or a preservation easement. Council will contribute up to half of that purchase, and we are placing a premium on properties that are evaluated using dual appraisal method. The third option is just straight-up compensation. This is the bulk of our discussion at our meeting. If someone doesn't want to sell their credits, if someone doesn't want to have their land bought as open space, or just wants a check, what can the council do to give them a check? And as we have said all along, nothing. All we can do is ask the legislature for funding to compensate landowners to make good on that profit that was made 10 years ago, and there would be compensation. So what the council, what the committee is developing is a recommendation to the state for how to fund that direct compensation using a water fee. And we expect to bring that forward to the full council for their consideration in the next month or so. But all members of that committee take very seriously trying to find a way to make whole every landowner in the Highlands region. We understand that is a tall order, but that's our goal. That's what we're reaching for. So that's the bulk of what we did, and that's my report. Any questions?
Thank you, Rob. Well said. Any council questions?
Yes, I have a question. Rob, you mentioned at the beginning about a decision or an opinion of some sort about how monies are to be used. Could you repeat that, and could you give a little more information? Because I don't see anything about that in the minutes.
If the minutes are reflected, that's an omission. It was short, and it was a minute or two discussion, but there has been raised by some not-for-profit and advocacy organizations that the money from the CFDG settlement could only be used for properties that are adjacent to or in view of the power lines. We're reminding everyone on the committee that it's not correct, that in fact the agreement allows for that money to be used broadly. We do recommend as a committee that the council places a premium on properties that are adjacent to or in the view of the power lines, but we're not required to solely use it for that purpose. I believe we give it half and half after, I'm not sure about the exact position. So if the minutes are light on that, it's because there wasn't much discussion on it, when it's here's the facts, and we moved on. I'm certain that Margaret or Andy can provide you with both the agreement and the legal opinion on that.
If I, Mr. Chairman, through you, if I could, thank Mr. Walton. There is, Councilmember Carluccio, on page 2, under the topic on the minutes that says PSE&G Developers Agreement. That's what Chairman Walton was just referring to. It says that Ms. Nordstrom provided the agreement and went over what the purposes of those funds could be used for. So that's where it is referenced.
I see that in here, but it does not say that there was an opinion given that the property that's purchased does not need to be adjacent to or in view of the power lines. So my question is, are you basing this on the paragraph 5 on page 2 of the PSE&G agreement solely? Do we have a legal opinion? I'd like more information on this. Do we have a legal opinion on this written?
The agreement speaks for itself. The agreement is pretty explicit. We can provide the agreement, and we discussed what the agreement held. There's not it's anybody can interpret it, but the language, in my view, is pretty clear. But it's a public document and it can be reviewed.
Well, I'm thinking more about the responsibilities that we have to the public to replace or in some way make up for the damages that were done by the PSE&G power line. And so I'm thinking about it more from the public's point of view, not from the point of view of an agreement with PSE&G. So I'm interested in what our responsibilities are to the public as a council.
Well, that's set forth in the agreement, which was approved by this council several years ago.
Well, do we have a legal opinion on that, though? Can we get a written legal opinion which explores this issue about whether or not properties need to be adjacent to or in lieu of power lines?
The interpretations that I've seen or heard of, and it's listed multiple times within the agreement, you can read one and read it one way, you can read another way, but as you go through the document, it gives some broad opinions on how it can be spent. Before getting into the specifics, it would probably be best for you to take a look at the agreement, and we can follow up and point out some of those areas to you, instead of bogging it down now, but I don't think we have like a written legal opinion from the DAG's office or something like that.
Well, it seems like it would be something that's not reinventing the wheel for the DAG's office. I mean, certainly there's plenty of instances where public agencies have done this kind of mitigation, and there must be some DAG or, set opinion on this if you're saying that it's, in the agreement and our public responsibilities are covered by that. I'd just like to see it in writing from an attorney.
Yeah. Well, can I suggest that what's contemplated is the program the bank committee that was just reported on is going to create a program and is going to be presented to the council for a vote. There are no funds that are going to be spent on anything unless and until this council specifically approves that program and the criteria. So, by just putting this in the minutes that it was discussed doesn't imply that the money's just going to be spent. It's going to come before the full council with the program for the council's approval.
That
so it's premature at this time to kind of give an opinion.
That's exactly why I'd like a legal opinion now, because of what's stated on the record, that is the case, that it does not need to be adjacent to a review of power lines. And if we're going to be voting on it, let's not wait for the last minute to get this opinion. Let's get this opinion now, so I can feel comfortable about the votes that we're going to have to be taking on these properties.
Thank you, Chris. Any other council members?
My memory serves me right, is that with the Tennessee Gas, the open space that they had to provide had to be within 10 miles of the gas line. Now, does that mean the agreements...
Sorry, whoever's speaking, I can't hear you.
Thank you. Does that mean the agreements could be different as far as the gas line and the power lines, the agreements that were approved be different?
They are different. I see that Committeeman Fazioli is...
Yes.
Remember the 10 miles?
Yes, it can be used outside of that 10-mile, as we had with the Tennessee Valley. It can be used broad scope within the Highlands region.
And we look at this as an opportunity with no funding coming from anywhere, as an opportunity to leverage these funds to what small degree we can to compensate affected landowners. So we think, all in all, this is a very positive step, albeit very small to what's needed to really compensate all the landowners. Any other comments? Seeing none, thank you, Rob, for reporting out on that.
Sure.
The next item up is the Regional Master Plan Update Committee. I think that will start off with its chair, Mr. Alston.
Yes, thank you. We've met as recently as yesterday, and as our acting executive director reported, the web portal is up, which was an important component of starting to collect input and data to and public opinion as to how we should proceed with the reevaluation of our master plan. And you may recall that there's three components that we've been presenting to you consistently and been reviewing. One is the web portal, One is the monitoring program, and the third is the fiscal impact assessment. At our last meeting, we had the subcontractor that we hired for the web portal, and with us today, we also have two of our other contractees. So what I'd like to do first is introduce to you Courtney Mercer and Rob Freudenberg from Regional Plan, and then with us also is Steve Gunnels from PlaceWorks, who's doing the fiscal work, and I believe they're prepared to do a brief introduction and answer questions. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. I'm sorry. Let's see. Let's be back there.
And I believe I'm on tap to start. I'm Courtney Mercer, as you heard, the recent renamed New Jersey Director of Regional Plan Association, which is an independent nonprofit established back in 1929. We've created three plans within the region and are currently working on the fourth plan for the region, looking at economic development, sustainable design, transportation through the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut metropolitan area. Lead staff is actually project supervisor Rob Freudenberg, who is my predecessor as the New Jersey director of Regional Plan Association, is now the Energy Environment Director. He is part of RPA's Regenerative Design Conference that was held here in the Highlands, and producing a forthcoming regenerative design handbook for the Highlands that you're going to get soon as a work product. And he worked with several Highlands municipalities, Hagerstown, Randolph, Morristown, to consider regenerative design and ran a Highlands Mayor's Institute a few years back. So he has a great deal of experience, direct experience in the Highlands. And some of you know my background. I am the former planning director of the Office of Smart Growth and have been involved with the Highlands. Actually, prior to that, as Secretary Paris's representative on the Highlands Task Force, and then when I worked at Office of Smart Growth, was the liaison to the Highlands Council from our office, and was involved largely with TDR, as well as the land use and the conformance aspects through the formation of the plan. We also will be have Ellis Calvin, who is not here, he's an associate planner. He will be working on a lot of the data involved that we need to review as part of this MPRR process. And Janani Shankarin is a research analyst who will be helping with the great amount of outreach that Corey will be telling you more about involved with this process. I don't think I'm telling you anything new about the MPRR. It's not necessarily meant to amend the regional master plan, but to develop factual foundation for potential future amendments. Also look at potential indicators and milestones to determine the impact of the act and continue to review it going forward. Our approach includes a great deal of stakeholder impact, inclusionary meetings that I'm not going to get into in detail because Corey is going to get into that in detail, but it does include stakeholder meetings up front, technical advisory committees, not as intense as the original master plan creation, but still very inclusive, as well as various more general public outreach activities. With all the information we've gathered from all these people, we will develop RMP monitoring indicators and milestones that will be included in a final science and research agenda, or will drive a final science and research agenda if, you know, we find that there is not a, that we want to look at an indicator and a milestone, but there isn't a data set out there to look at that, then that will be part of our recommendations, is we have to find that data set somehow. We will identify any new or emerging issues that we hear from the public, from stakeholders, et cetera, and we will recommend new or modified priorities for the RMP that will, of course, come back to the council to decide. Again, it's a very iterative process with public, stakeholders, and the council throughout the process. And it is also coordinated with PlaceWorks, who is doing the fiscal impact assessment. They will be doing a lot of the economic data, which we will then incorporate it into the MPRR and the final recommendations. And on that, I will hand over to Steve to explain that. Ben.
Good afternoon. I'd like to just take a moment to introduce myself. I'm probably not as well known to you as Courtney and RPA is, and talk a little bit about what we're going to look at with the fiscal impact assessment so that we have a clear understanding of what we'll be bringing back to you in the future. I'm the chief economist at PlaceWorks. I've been in planning and economic development for over 22 years. I worked in for local government in Virginia, consultant in the Midwest, and now in California. I do a lot of economic development from the standpoint of what municipalities and public agencies do to try and attract jobs and employers to their communities. And then on the developer side, we do a lot of work with developers on perform analysis and understanding what kind of products they need to develop and what the market will support and what their investments need to be. And then, of course, the fiscal analysis for municipalities to understand planning and development and what those impacts will be to their budgets going forward. Our company, one of the things we do is we do a lot of work with the private sector, with developers, and with the public sector. So we bring that kind of background to this project, and I think that's one of the key things is because we're working so often with private developers, understanding that perspective of the investment community and what they're looking for, and the public sector, and we're always very clear not to try, you know, to give the correct answer where the numbers take us. Not try and satisfy one side or the other, since we work with both. The other one of the things we do a lot of work with also is GIS, which is the computer mapping. We do have a very big project right now with San Bernardino County, looking at all of their individual property records from the assessing database, and it's a county of about 20,000 square miles, so it's huge. And that's part of what we'll be doing in this analysis, in the fiscal impact analysis. And then we work with a lot of regional planning agencies. So one of the projects I worked on recently was the 8 counties in the San Joaquin Valley and doing long-range demographic forecasts so they could better understand what they needed to plan for in terms of economic development and their transportation system in the Central Valley. One thing I'd like to leave or mention is I think one of the values, you know, one of the questions I would expect you to ask is why are you hiring a company from California to do this kind of work here? But I think one of the key things is that allows us to have a bit of objectivity in the analysis that we do. We don't have a vested interest one way or the other in the outcome. And so we're going to be very objective in just looking at the numbers and following that story and seeing where that takes us. And that's the report that you'll get out of us at the end of this process. So with the fiscal impact assessment, broadly what we want to do is kind of look at how regions grow or don't grow. And really the primary driver is economic development in a region. So if a region is growing, stagnating, or declining, that then influences population. If it's growing, it's going to do more to attract new residents to the area and keep more of the younger people when they get out of high school or college. Areas that have declining economies don't attract those migrants and see more people leaving. So it's the economy that then leads to those population changes. It's the population changes that then lead to the real estate transactions, buying and selling of houses and developing land for new houses where people live, developing land for new retail centers and new job space. So those population changes then pull the real estate development process, which drives the property values for everybody who owns property in the region. Those property values then generate the property tax that is the revenue source for the municipalities, and those population changes also drive the demand for services. So it kind of goes that whole big circle, and that's what we're going to be looking at, is that whole entire circle with this process. So we'll start with an economic analysis, looking at detailed job data by employers so that we can see where jobs are located in each municipality, and whether it's in a planning area or outside of the planning area, the preservation area, and we can start to understand what's the difference in employment growth and economic activity in these different areas compared to the rest of the state and compared to the adjacent regions in Pennsylvania and New York. We'll then be looking at demographic data and doing that same sort of comparison. We'll look at sales data, home sales data, throughout the Highlands region, once again looking at specifically where those addresses are so we understand the impacts that are happening in each municipality. We'll also look at the assessing data for every individual parcel throughout the Highlands region, and compare that to what's happening elsewhere in the state and in the adjacent regions of other states. Finally, that allows us to then take a look at the municipal finance data from the comprehensive annual financial reports and budget data from each of the municipalities, and start to see what the impact has been on each municipality. So as we're doing all of these analysis, what we're going to be looking at is kind of the situation prior to the Act in 2004, the situation prior to the adoption of the plan in 2008, and then where we are today, which will be a combination of 2012 and 2013 data, which is typically the most recent that's available. So we can start to understand, has there been a difference, and to what degree has there been a difference that we can see in the preservation areas, the planning areas, and the areas that aren't in the region. Well, I packed a lot of details in there without giving you pretty pictures on a PowerPoint to look at. We'll wrap all that up in a final report, but another big thing that we'll be producing out of this is a municipal fact book, so that we'll then have not just the information on the region and the whole report, but we'll be able to organize it by municipality and in a convenient form. So for each municipality, you can go to your page in the fact book and understand what the impacts are for that individual municipality. I have gone through that as fast as I can. I hope I haven't gone too fast, but we are here for questions if you have that. Great.
I just have a concern. Mm-hmm. You're talking development. You haven't mentioned once anything about water protection. That's what this council is about. So if you're going to consider the economics, I think it would be development versus water protection that has to be considered also.
Yes. That is part of, we'll be looking at those issues. I tried to just pick a few highlights.
You just spoke of economics. There's nothing about water protection at all.
But we will address that.
For in all fairness, if his charge is fiscal analysis, how do you translate water preservation to dollars and cents?
Unless you take that into consideration. There's a town that has five reservoirs in it, and you say, you're looking at their economic health, but also you know that town is very important because of its water resources. I mean, that's economics also, because that water is sold to thousands of people, millions of people in New Jersey.
I think he said he would take it into account, but also within the Act it says that an impact, a fiscal analysis should be done to see the impacts of the law.
Okay. My concern was I didn't hear anything about water protection, and that's what we're about here.
Mr. Marlin?
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Last meeting I also was concerned about this, and one of the things that I'm clear of that, are you going to be, when you look at the economics, mm-hmm. you look at the costs, you look at what benefits may accrue, There are economic analyses that are consider environmental factors, and they're used in natural resource damage assessments, for instance. I mean, there is a whole body that I'm sure you're familiar with about how you actually do value the special values that, for instance, a water protection council would be mandated to protect. And one of the things that I know it's been used in litigation, but it's also been used in the Clean Water Act and these natural resource damage assessment and analyses. And I'm just wondering, are you experienced in that? And when you do talk about do the fiscal analysis, are you going to be considering the costs and benefits for environmental resources? And if so, how are you going to do that?
I would say that based on the scope of work and the RFP, that's not the primary focus of what we're looking at. The primary focus really is the economy and the property values and what's happened at the municipal level on the fiscal resources of municipalities. That said, we certainly do want to account for the value of the resource that's been preserved. But those, I don't know that I have a good answer for you right now, because we're just at the beginning of the process for how we want to incorporate that into this.
That's the kind of thing that I think Carl's also talking about. And we certainly will be watching for that very closely.
Yes.
In order to get the comprehensive analysis that we need.
It seems to me that the Act has dictated science. When I look at this, the legislature passed the law and told us this is what we're going to do. The law is backed up by DEP regs. And then the charge in the master plan review and in the Act is this fiscal analysis. What is the cost? What is the impact on this region as a result of the science that we've decided to utilize to protect this water resource? Because the water resource is protected. So the whole basis for the fiscal analysis is, what is it costing us to protect this water resource, and what portion of that cost has been borne upon the people who live inside this region? That's, I think, what we need to get to.
But today, fiscal analyses do consider the values that have accrued from protecting environmental resources. It's not simply looking at what it costs, but it's also what have we gained.
Maybe
and now we have the
basis.
Value of clean water. And these are the kinds of sort of, they're not really philosophical. They're really, in today's world, they're really embedded in the art of doing these sorts of analyses. Fiscal analysis, yes, is mandated by the Act. But I think, what we're talking about here is that you can't just look at one side of it. What has it cost in terms of land values, for instance, without looking at, and what is the value of the clean water that we now have?
Okay, let me just give a little bit better answer than that. We do want to address in our report the value of the resource that's been preserved. But I don't want to give you a misconception that we're doing a cost-benefit analysis of that. That's not in the scope. We do cost-benefit analysis on a variety of environmental issues, especially in California, a lot of it's air quality. That would be double the budget to really try and do that level of analysis. So that's not what we're doing. I don't want you to, that's part of what we're going to do is manage the expectation. I don't want to come back to you when we're done and then have that question. It's not going to be a cost-benefit analysis. What we are going to do is address what is the value of the resource that's been preserved. So it's not just all cost on one side.
That's good, and we'll be looking forward to a more detailed scope on it as you develop it.
Any other questions? Or either?
So if there's no other questions for our hired consultants, Corey prepared a PowerPoint just to very quickly and briefly acquaint you with some of the work that's going to be done regarding the monitoring program for the master plan review, and I think he's prepared to do it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kurt.
Thank you.
Thank you for traveling here to New Jersey.
So we've had a, you keep hearing us mention the public participation and outreach that we're going to be undertaking as part of this process. What I'd like to do today is walk you through a little bit of how we've proposed to undertake what is a very large task. So, as you can see, I've always included this slide every month to show you the progress that we're moving forward. We will move the calendar forward very shortly. At this point, we've got the web portal open. We're fully engaged in the information gathering phase, and I think the RMP update committee saw from our meeting yesterday that we're continuing to discuss data, gather data, and keeping the committee informed as to those activities the best we can. Moving on to the public participation and outreach approach, the approach consists of six steps. The web comment portal, targeted stakeholder meetings, stakeholder outreach workshops, technical advisory committee meetings, public outreach sessions, and public hearings on the draft reports. Steps 1 through 5 are primarily focused on gathering information about indicators and milestones, and they're really helping us build those reports, while step 6 focuses on receiving public comment and council comment on the draft reports. As I've said, the public comment web portal is the first phase of the public engagement in the monitoring program recommendation report project. The portal will provide a continuous opportunity for interested members of the public, regulatory agencies, non-governmental organizations, business owners, and academic institutions to provide comment throughout the public engagement process. As I've said, the portal is now open for comments, and while we encourage members of the council, members of the public, to submit comments through that portal, we will be accepting comments through traditional means such as email, regular mail, fax, etc. The public comment web portal will close on February 27th, 2015. The next step is targeted stakeholder meetings. They'll be technical in nature and are intended to garner feedback from specific stakeholder entities about potential indicators and monitoring data available. These meetings will include small groups of stakeholders with topical knowledge and access to essential information to facilitate meaningful discussion and provide maximum ability to participate in each meeting. Each meeting will include no more than 15 to 20 participants. The participants in the targeted stakeholder meetings will be provided with a briefing document that summarizes regional resources relevant to the specific topic area and stakeholders' experience, knowledge, and interests, and the RMP's impact on the same.
So you're saying that the 11 meetings will each have a different topic?
Yes, they'll be with different groups. And so this slide here shows our state and federal stakeholders. We're required to meet with each of these state agencies and federal agencies as part of the Act, Section 9. This next page is a list of municipal officials, county officials, non-governmental organizations, etc., that we've pulled from the local participation technical document that was created as part of the 2008 RMP monitoring program process, or RMP creation process. Clearly, we are receptive to the addition of groups, Mr. Chairman, so if there are any recommendations, we'd ask that you get in touch with us somehow or email the
I think if there are any groups, feel free to send an email out so we can check into it.
Next, in order to facilitate a dialogue with individuals or groups that may be too large or too diverse to accommodate in the smaller targeted format, or even unable to attend in those targeted group meetings, we'll have stakeholder outreach workshops, which will serve to provide initial information about the MPRR process and garner feedback on the challenges and opportunities in relevant topic areas. The workshops will include a series of interactive sessions, providing an opportunity to learn and engage about different topics of interest to Highland stakeholders. Participants in the stakeholder outreach workshops will have an opportunity to review information boards that summarize regional resource and policy information with an overview of RMP goals and objectives on the same. Workshops will be open to the public as well as invited guests. And based on, and I want to emphasize this point, based on the popularity of any specific topic area at these events, the council clearly may choose to have additional meetings to cover a specific topic area to make sure that we're thoroughly addressing all of the concerns and making sure that we're hearing everybody. Next, we have the Technical Advisory Committees, or TAC meetings, which will occur in two phases. The first meeting of the TACs will occur towards the middle of the research phase in order to review draft indicator findings and discuss data needs. And we anticipate the first set of those meetings to occur this winter, 2014-2015. And the second meeting will occur after the indicators have been applied to identify key trends in the region from 2004 to 2014. And based on these findings, the TACs will engage in a dialogue to deliberate milestones for monitoring activities for the 2015 through 2025 time period. We anticipate those second set of meetings occurring in the spring of 2015. And TACs will include technical experts in each of the topic areas of the RMP. Next, we have the public outreach sessions. They're preceded by the in-depth research phase that we're undertaking, and they're intended to inform the general public about the effort. The research phase for the RMP will include identification of indicators, both pre-act and post-act data, and meetings with stakeholders. In order to educate and communicate with participants in a transparent, readily understandable format, the research will be published in a briefing book that will be made available to the public prior to the beginning of the public outreach sessions. Clearly, the public outreach sessions will be open to the public, and they'll be held at three locations throughout the Highlands region, and specific topics for the sessions are as of yet to be determined. It will be based on the stakeholder engagement process. Finally, under step six, we have the public hearing on the draft reports. At this point, when we hit step six, where our consultants will present to the council the draft reports. Once the council approves the release of those draft reports for public comment, two things will happen. The public comment web portal will reopen to accept comments, and we'll have the public hearings. There'll be a series of five public hearings throughout the Highlands region. We have not set locations or dates for these meetings because they're obviously dependent on the schedule of the council and the delivery of the draft reports. And that's all I have for you today on that process. Are there any questions?
I have a couple questions.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. On the last one you just went over, why is there a break in the acceptance through the portal? Is it so you can assess what was said and then reopen, or what is the purpose?
Yes, we need to. Clearly, we need to close the portal so that we can gather the comments, review the comments, and that will influence the writing of the draft report. So there'll be a period from when the portal closes where we sort of shutter ourselves down and we are, you know, working on writing those reports and preparing them for you. So if we kept receiving comments, that'd be...
And once this council approves that draft, then it will reopen again so they can comment on the draft.
Right, so that would be the February 27th date that you mentioned?
When it closes for the first time, yes.
And so then the writing would start March?
Yeah, I mean, we still have that second set of TAC meetings that we're going to have to undertake, and we may so choose to extend that period based on how the rest of these public outreach meetings are going.
Right, that's what I was kind of wondering, was then the TAC advisory committee meetings seem to go past February 27th. Is that true?
It's many cogs working at the same time. It is.
Right.
But how will
they... With all these costs going, but they need time to work on that. If they extend the public comment period beyond February 27th, it's that much longer before they can get to that, pushes everything back.
Oh, I understand that. I'm just a little confused about how then, if you're writing the draft report based on the public input that was received up to February 27th, then how does the Technical Advisory Committee input get integrated if you're writing it?
The data collection doesn't necessarily mean writing of the draft report. It's consolidation of what we anticipate to be a lot of public comment. It takes a lot of time in itself to get it to the right categories and pull everything out of it. So that's not part of the writing of the report. It's about collecting that data prior to writing the report.
Okay. I guess when it's happening, it'll be... It just seems like it's a little confusing in terms of how that input actually makes it into the draft report.
I think we're... And I get where you're going. And so I think what we're trying to explain is that as we are writing the draft report, as we are producing those draft conclusions, that second set of TAC meetings is really to fact-check our work against groups of technical experts. That's why there's two sessions of TAC meetings.
Okay, so they will actually see a draft of...
It won't be a draft report, but it'll be ideas, right?
I had a couple of other things.
Please.
It's okay. And then for the targeted stakeholder groups, I know you looked at what was, who weighed in 2008. I see some people missing, so just recommend if you see some groups missing, right?
Yeah, okay. We'll look at them as the impacts they have, and if they're impacted, should be. We're going to be all inclusive as we can.
Right.
We'll be listening to somebody from Delaware.
Yeah. Well, you never know. That's down the street from the Highlands. On the Delaware River. But you said you check into it. Is it an automatic? If somebody, a group reaches out, maybe they've formed since 2008. They say, gee, we're concerned about Highlands resources. We want to be a targeted stakeholder. Is that something that's an open process, or is there some approval that goes?
I think we've set a policy up. I guess any stakeholder.
And what would they...
Probably need an example. Other than just...
Let's say it's a new, a new land preservation group that's formed since 2008, and they want to make comment. What is the process for somebody to be, not just make comment, but be considered a target stakeholder? What's the process if someone wants to...
We talk about historic preservation, and they're at the table. But the lowest level we're bringing them in at is the county level, instead of opening it up to every municipality and every, so there has to be a cutoff point somewhere. So that's why I think if it's reasonable, I don't see why we would leave them out. So it's hard for me to really answer your question without something more specific. So if every municipality wants to come in, we're going to come grinding to a halt. And everybody's going to have an opportunity, obviously, through the public process, but the stakeholder aspect of it has to be defined.
It seems like it would be a good idea to have a defined process, just so if groups want to be a targeted stakeholder and then have them a special meeting, they would know how to do it.
And the request was those that, in fact, somebody identified something yesterday at the meeting, I forget who it was, but that should have been on the list.
Oh, yeah, there's other groups, too. And then in the minutes from the RMD update committee, Mr. Piasecki is talking about, under number four, these various charrettes. It was unclear from the PowerPoint, too. Are these technical advisory committees meetings that are going to be and or stakeholder meetings? Are they all going to be open to the general public, or is it going to be by invitation only, as you mentioned in one of the other?
The original stakeholder meetings will be invitation only with those stakeholders. Then there will be a follow-up with stakeholders that will include the public.
But the original stakeholder meetings will only invite certain people will be invited to them? And what is the reason for that?
If that's the whole idea of that. Have the stakeholder meetings is to keep it defined to what those groups are interested in, as opposed to everybody gets to say at the table, so to speak. that's why we're trying to keep people grouped together. It's not a debate at this point in time. It's gathering of information on what you find to be the issues with the act and what you think it should be. And the next, you know, it's like each one of us up here representing a different group. So that's what you're trying to do. It's not a public scenario.
Right. I'm just wondering why they're not open to the public, though. I believe that the Shreks, the first time around, you know, I attended them, they were open. And people could come, and you know, frankly, not everybody participated,
we're
but they were interested in engaging.
Attend, but I don't know if they attended the first round. They didn't know.
Well, they did. I think we should think about having them open to the public, because I think the more all of these meetings are open to the public, the more transparent we are. And I don't think everyone's going to want to, you know, be debating. It's really a matter of learning and listening and, you know, participating as a member of the public. So. I would ask that we reconsider that and think about opening up these stakeholder meetings and technical advisory committee meetings to anybody who wants to attend them, but make sure that you've also invited the people who are going to be able to carry some special knowledge to the meeting as well. I certainly understand that that's important.
Look into it.
I think that's all.
Do we have a delegate? Anybody on the committee that wants to chime in?
Hey,
Gordon, you have more? Or is that it?
No, that's it for me.
That is it.
That's everything.
We have a very aggressive schedule coming up. And I think just to back up what Chairman Riley just said, all these meetings, we hope to have as much council member participation as possible. So we'll be announcing schedules, and I think the intent is if there's a particular meeting that is important to you, certainly try to accommodate a schedule that allows you to be there. But, there's going to be plenty of meetings to go to if you want to pack your winter months up for it.
And we have accommodated some of the stakeholders. That weren't identified specifically by a group scenario. So some of the residents had asked about that, and we have identified those. So there will be a stakeholder meeting for those as well. We'll be invited to one of the stakeholder meetings. All right, then we'll move on.
That brings us to public comments. Reminder to keep this to 3 minutes or less, please. At this point in time, we'll open the public. Please raise your hand. Yes, sir.
Excuse me. I had a question on the fiscal analysis.
Mr. Chairman, can we ask that the speakers please identify themselves before they speak?
I've been doing this a lot, and I really should remember that. It's George Stafford. I'm with the Jersey Highlands Coalition, and I live in Wharton in the Highlands. My question is, I heard what the parameters are going to be for how you judge what the economy is now and what the economy was at the beginning of the act and presently. But what I didn't hear, the only thing that I heard that had any impact was the act. There are other factors that have occurred over that 10-year period that may well have had impact in the Highlands and otherwhere. And I didn't hear anywhere how they were going to be figured in. Fuel oil prices are up by maybe, 50%, home heating oil, infrastructure problems, the change in the real estate market from, boy, let's have a lot of these McMansions in the early 2000s to now we're doing knockdowns in the cities and throwing up condos and old brownstones. The idea that Hoboken and Jersey City and places like Brooklyn are where things are happening now, and that's got nothing to do with the Highlands Act, it's just that the real estate market has changed. And I wouldn't want the Highlands Act to be a scapegoat for the fact that there have been changes in the energy market, and the infrastructure, cost of natural gas versus, you know, cost of propane, diesel fuel for people who are in farming. There are going to be a lot of reasons, and there will be a lot of other impacts in the Highlands than just the act. So how is that going to be factored in? I suppose that's a question for this gentleman, rather than anybody else.
Yeah, as part of the fiscal impact analysis, other other things other than the act are being taken into consideration, correct?
Correct.
So it's not, without getting into the body and every item. Yes, those
I understand that this is a Cliff Notes version of what yes. this guy's going to do. But
it's not just the act, the impact of the act, rather. It's not the only thing.
How do you
not,
separate
everything's not being blamed on the act. It's, yeah. it's really to look at.
How do you separate those out?
Well, we don't want to get into Q&A with each one of these right now, but we can get that information out to you and we'll post it.
Thank you.
Anybody else in the public wish to be heard?
Yes.
Helen Heinrich, Jersey Farm Bureau. I'm trying to visualize what we're going to end up with, and every meeting I'm confused. Are we going to end up with a changed master plan? The examination usually ends up in changes to the formal master plan. It sounds to me like we're going to end up with reports from these consultants, drafts, and then final versions. But
this process works much like a municipal master plan review. You identify where you think there may be changes based upon the data collected, and then at that point in time, then we would decide whether to address items within the act. So it's not this work that's going to change the act.
So
this is the work that's being done to identify anything that we may want to consider a change.
Okay,
not the act, I'm sorry. It's the original master plan. I want to be clear on that. Not the act. The original master plan. The act, you can talk to your legislators.
So then there'll be a whole other process to act on reports that they give you?
Correct.
And we don't have any indication of when that's going to take place or how it will proceed. That will come, I guess.
Well, obviously, we had a timeline today that showed when we anticipate this part ending.
Yeah.
And it's not 2 or 3 months. It's many months from now, and a lot of things can get in the way, faster, slower, who knows. So, and then how we react to those items, obviously.
So then the work starts, going over what they tell you to do and figuring out which words specifically you change.
Looking at the suggestions that come from those reports, or identifying, not even suggestions, identifying things that we see in those reports that we may want to address right. as a body.
Okay, I think I can picture it better. I'm very glad to see that the first stakeholder group is going to be the federal and state agencies. We believe that one of the weaknesses of the Act and the RMP is that there seems to be no formal way for especially the state agencies, to interact with the RMP and the FUOL. For example, the Department of Ag is just considered another part of public comment instead of an advisor to you the way the state agencies were with the state plan. So I'm very glad to see that it's going to start there. Something was said about the the bank's way of dealing with compensation, that you're going to look into compensation for open space for woodland owners rather than just farmland. And I know that that is included in the master plan. There is no such process at this point. We only can remember the last meeting with that very eloquent woman that the only thing she could do with her wooded property was to sell it to Green Acres. She wants to preserve it, but she doesn't want to move out. We think one of the things you've got to do is to get that program organized. And I don't know if the bank committee can do this. Is Mr. Walton still on the phone? Anyway, that is a very important task for that group to do in our opinion.
Thank you. We are working on it. Thank you. Anybody else in the public? Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Dave Pfeiffer. I'm Highlands Project Director for the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. I want to be added to this, our organization to be added to the stakeholder list. You see it on there. But I want to bring your attention to something that I think is potentially very serious. Some of you may be aware that New York State has recently embarked on the siting of new casinos throughout upstate New York. Two of those casino sites that are proposed are in Orange County, New York. Orange County, New York is the headwater area of the Ramapo River, which enters New Jersey in Mahwah. And Orange County has had double-digit population growth since every decade since 1960. Both of these casinos will be major water consumers, major sewage generators, and major stormwater creators. The threat is to water supplies in the Highlands, in New Jersey, that are related or directly involving the Ramapo River. There are seven towns in northern New Jersey that have wells that are in intimate connection with that river. When the river comes up, the wells come up. When the river goes down, the wells go down. And when they pump those wells hard, they pull that river in to the wells. At the time that the sole source aquifer designation was filed, over 64,000 people in those towns drew water from those wells. Further downstream, there's an outfall, an outtake point at Compton Lake, which involves water that can be moved to the Wanacue Reservoir or to the Oradell Reservoir. That's 150 million gallons a day potential water supply. But if the river flow drops below a certain threshold, that pumping station cannot be used because we have to have water going downstream. So reducing the flow in the Ramapo could have a very important impact on North Jersey's water supply system. A little further downriver, the Ramapo meets the Pompton, and a little further downstream, the Pompton meets the Passaic. At that point, there's another pumping station to put water back upstream into the Wanacue Reservoir that is capable of doing 250 million gallons a day. So at that point, we're pulling water from the Passaic, but also from the Ramapo, Quantic, the Wanacue, and the Pompton. A little further downstream at Little Falls is another major water supply diversion point for the Passaic Valley Water Commission. So the Ramapo is known to be under stress right now. It was under stress even in the 1970s. And we are very concerned that the casino siting in the short term, but continued unconscious development that's unaware of the downstream impact on Highlands water resources will affect.
Thank you. A couple of members have brought it to our attention. We are keeping our eyes on it right now. It's not at a point for us to do anything.
Public comment period closes the end of the month.
So, this month.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard? Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for letting me speak, and council also. My name's Hank Klump. I own 150 acres in the Highlands Preservation Area. My 150 acres has been forcibly put into the preservation by the Highlands Act, against my will, with no money changing hands. Now it's going into the 11th year. No one has answered my question as to what kind of taxes I would be asked to pay if my farmland no longer qualifies for farmland assessment. When I am too old to farm, should my 150 acres still be based on Tewksbury real estate tax value when the land is unbuildable? There have been no answers from the council, the Tewksbury Tax Office, the Lebanon Tax Office, Sean Van Doren, the mayor of Tewksbury, called me and feels I have a valid question and concern and said he would look into it. But I still have no answers. I, with so many others, have lost my property value. The Highlands Act is a multi-billion dollar robbery. None of us are lobbyists, getting paid to appear here. And we are not against the environment. As a farmer, I cherish my property and have cared for it with a devotion that most environmentalists will never understand. Let me make one thing clear. I am a stakeholder. The dictionary defines a stakeholder as a person or group that has an interest or concern in an organization. That certainly qualifies me and all of us who have had our property values stolen. We all have interests and concerns that paid lobbyists who are considered stakeholders by this council will never begin to understand. Farm landowners, no voice, and are not being heard, while many lobbyists who just ramble on hold a paycheck should have duct tape put on their mouths. So they can feel what it's like to have no voice. Thanks for letting me speak, but I got two PSs here. Dual appraisal hasn't been approved yet, as far as I know. Land sales for the Highlands is a thing that you got to look at in your estimate for your RPM or these people here. It's land sales in the Highlands. And you know, when Integra did the $64,000 price tag on land, that was a legitimate figure. But, you know, to bring it down, that's a $48,000 difference. I mean, that's not peanuts, people. Thanks for letting me speak. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And we agree that you are a stakeholder. We're making sure that you will be for you. So,
thank you.
My name is Deborah Post, Harn property owner, Chester Township. In connection with Harn landowner stakeholder status from the landowner's perspective, we continue to be met with silence. In fact, my offer for a listing of your stakeholder meetings and technical advisory committees was denied. So goes transparency. I want to thank Mr. Walton and Mr. Dressler for focusing their committee on landowner compensation per my reading of the HDC Bank Committee meeting minutes. Referring to a water usage fee as a cost and not a tax is well advised. FYI, water usage fees exist today as a cost line in the Water Authority budget. I suggest this council recommend that that existing cost line item be increased for the Highlands earmark. Or, alternatively, the council might recommend that the Water Authority be required to purchase a TDR for each X amount of gallons of Highlands water it delivers to the Eastern New Jersey communities. That might be step one in creating demand for TDRs. Regarding the committee minutes discussion of the TDR, I adamantly object to the phrasing of, quote, credit value per acre of $16,000, end quote. Whoever penned those words lacks knowledge of the Highlands RMP's TDR technical report and the development of the HDC. First, the HDC is not an acre. It is a complex formula reflecting the marginal value of a fifth buildable unit. See your own consultant's work, page 35. Second, the $16,000 is the initial price set by this council. To equate price with value reflects sheer gross ignorance. The pricing of the HDC reflects an 83% discount to to its appraised value for the work of Integra Resources. Again, see page 35. The HDC appraised value of $92,000 was discounted by 30% to reflect soft costs of development, and then by another 75% to reflect the developer's willingness to pay. The 75% discount for the developer's willingness to pay is nothing more than a shift of equity value from landowners to builders. I can't imagine anything more abominable than the idea that a developer is deserving of 75% of a farmer's equity, and that this council feels it is entitled to give away our property value. The Highlands Act gives this council the statutory authority to set the initial price of the HDC, which obviously the council has the authority to change. Please do it.
Thank you. Just for your information, the stakeholder group meetings have not been identified yet as soon as they are completed. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Jody Anderson. Our property is a 74-acre deciduous tree farm in Lebanon County, Lebanon Township, all in the preservation area. First, I want to say thank you to the kind people who spoke to me after the August meeting with words of sympathy and encouragement. I did appreciate it. As I said, our property is a 74-acre deciduous tree farm, all in the preservation area in Lebanon Township. A number of years ago, I heard that all except 6 acres of Lebanon Township was in the preservation area. When I inquired at Lebanon Township Municipal Building as to where the 6 acres was located, they had no idea. The thought was that all was in the preservation area. Recently, I discovered the location. I would like to know the rationale behind the decision that only these 6 acres owned by Mueller Toyota be in the planning area. All of the rest of Lebanon Township is in the preservation area. And this is just a little off the cuff comment. I did not confer with Hank Plump before this meeting, but perhaps thought waves were moving around. With due respect to environmental groups, our land, a deciduous tree farm of 74 acres, wouldn't be, in quotes, open space today if our family hadn't been private environmentalists. Today, there are paid environmental lobbyists. Unfortunately, there are no such groups for those of us harmed by the onerous restrictions in the preservation area. For 10 years now, we have been paying for the fallout from the Highlands Act with no reimbursement. Who has been getting out the word for all of us from the Highlands area? Who has been lobbying for us in areas outside the 800,000 plus affected areas? There are many people in the rest of New Jersey who have no idea what the Highlands Act is, never heard of it, what it has done to landowners. When they are told the response is, that is so unfair. How is that allowed to happen? When they actually read some of the Highlands Act, they are appalled. Now, 10 years after the passage of the Highlands Act, our stress level is extremely high.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to hear?
My name is David Shope. I'm a foreman in Lebanon Township. Just as an aside, we're Mulda Toyota's building a service center right now. With a tailwind, you can spin into Spruce Run Reservoir. So much for water preservation. What a joke. And as far as the original master plan impact that you're undergoing, I want to just stress again that I have not heard in years, and I have not heard it again today, the fact that you have not considered the value of raw Highlands land in any of your economic considerations. Housing prices, they're almost irrelevant. So please consider that when you do your scientific analysis or fiscal analysis. Some time ago, Mr. Davis said he was going to investigate the evidence of scientific misconduct. I would like to see a copy of that investigation. And if there's a reason why I can't see it, I'd like to know that reason as well. And for Danis, the nitrate dilution model, the validation model, have you done it yet? I don't think so. And also, the USGS did under contract for the Highlands Council a nitrate dilution model which predicted up to 140,000 additional septic systems could be accommodated in the Highlands without any significant degradation of water quality. The Highlands Council didn't like that, and they say 8,000 new septic systems. We have 148 from a contractor that you contracted versus 8,000 because the Highlands Council elected to take this report out back and bury it with God knows what else you have buried out there. So I would like to see that report that USGS made public, and I would also like to know who in the council decided to toss it and what are their qualifications. Also, there is not to date any code of scientific conduct. I would like to see that part of the new work that you're doing. Without a code of scientific conduct, it's a free-for-all, which does not lend itself well to the scientific method. Also, I would like a copy of the 7/11/08 memo from Lisa Jackson to Corzine with a CC to Swan, which means it should be in your file, basically saying that it was the Highlands Council that set the nitrate standards, not New Jersey DEP. I'd like a copy of that memo as well, made public. I reviewed a whole bunch of literature, and it's a pile of it sits over there in the chair, concerning TDRs. And what they all say, including the Regional Plan Association, they cite demographic trends as a reason for going forward with TDRs. Well, if there are demographic trends as a reason for TDRs, the marketplace should take care of it. There's no reason to force it down anybody's throat. Clearly, there's more than demographic trends as their reasoning for TDRs. Many other reports all cite that it's a, quote, is it a, well, one of them cites that, and this is Hashan Otko from Brown University, is a promising concept, but just difficult to successfully implement. And they all go, also go on to say that impervious surface as a tool for TDRs, their chart shows that up to 10% impervious coverage it protects water.
Thank you for your comments.
So this 3% is off the wall.
Thank you.
You should read this stuff.
Anybody else in the public wish to be heard?
Hello, good afternoon. I'm Wilma Fry, New Jersey Conservation Foundation. I would just like to reinforce the message that Dave Piper brought to you about the importance of the Ramapo River watershed and the fact that these large casino developments are being proposed in that watershed. We do have a report, a preliminary report, analysis of this, which is written by a former chief of the Water Supply Planning Section of the New Jersey DEP, which we would be able to provide to you early next week. And I would like to remind people that Governor Christy Whitman and the legislature in around, I can't remember the exact year, it was the mid-90s, that administration provided the first $10 million for the acquisition of the Sterling Forest property that eventually became the Sterling Forest State Park. So that was $10 million. And also Passaic County actually took by eminent domain a couple thousand acres that was south of the New Jersey-New York border because of the water supply importance of the region. So this is definitely something that impacts the Wanacue Reservoir, as Dave mentioned, which is New Jersey's largest water source of water supply. And so I think it's something that the council definitely should be paying attention to. Thank you.
Thank you.
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. Not to beat a dead horse, but we've all been spending a lot of time working in New York and not New Jersey recently because of the extremely fast timetable that this decision is on, based on the legislation. There are 17 casinos up for four choices. Two of them could be in Orange County. Both of the two biggest ones will impact Ramapo River. The public comment period is the 23rd next week, and it closes the 30th. If the Highlands Council is going to have any kind of input, it is really important that you do that quickly. Wilma referred to Casca's report, which is just about complete. Jonathan A. has also prepared a report. He's one of New Jersey's best hydrologists. We will share that with the council, and those reports might be helpful, but you need to authorize your staff to do something before the deadline, which is before you meet again. So that is extremely important. The other thing I just wanted to point out as we begin this, we have begun this long regional master plan review process. It is important for everybody to remember that we have a regional master plan that is not being implemented yet. So it's kind of hard for us to say whether it's working. We have one town that has completed the conformance process. Until we complete have all those towns have finished going through the conformance process, and we are implementing a final regional master plan, which, as you know, has a lot of changes that are going to be made because of the RFPs that are out, replacing the ordinances and so on, the land use ordinance that was stripped out. It's kind of an incomplete process right now, and it's important to remember that we are commenting on a very incomplete process. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard? Seeing none, we'll close the public portion. We have no executive session. Motion to adjourn.
I would like to recommend that we authorize staff to review those reports and comment, make public comment on the casino issue and the Sterling Forest Ramapo River issue so that our position is clear to the New York State.
Yeah, I just think it has to be technical on data because we're authorizing her to make a determination on.
So we have DEP to is doing something.
That's a note I made. I didn't know what DEP was on this issue.
It's a former chief. He is retired. This is stuff that he is doing outside. He's one of the most knowledgeable people on the slide.
No, I meant I didn't know where, not him, but what DEP is, NJDEP is doing on this particular issue.
You can find out.
Mr. Chairman, that's what I was going to say too. And I would think that we have information already in the regional master plan in terms of the Ramapo River and the importance of the Ramapo River. And perhaps the comment can be made based on what's
up. I've collected data that's existing there, yeah.
So do we think that the comment will be made during the public comment period? Do we need to vote on this? Or?
It's not an agenda item, but any other council members want to chime in on this?
I don't think a vote is required, Mr. Chairman. I think it's a directive from your chair to our acting director, did or not?
Yeah, I think this.
I don't think any vote is required.
I think this council should definitely condemn on the side of the water quality of the Ramapo River. And tell New York we oppose the development of these casinos in Orange County unconditionally.
Absolutely. I agree.
Anybody else?
I just think that we need to do so with some sort of level of scientific basis, because right now all we've received is hearsay, and I'm not suggesting the hearsay is wrong, but we haven't had anybody professionally come before us yet and say, here's the data. If this happens, this is the result.
And have it reviewed by our staff.
Right. I think we need to base our decisions on sound science. I'm
not sure. Or I think somebody pointed out our regional master plan. And we have that.
So I just heard this report in the last one.
I'm sorry.
So what's it going to
do? We're going to refer to the regional master plan. The impacts listed within. We can't look at scientific data.
Unless it comes in hand prior to the submission date, I think
we can
be issues before.
The council can authorize a vote to send a technical meeting to that public session with any information that's gathered already. They can determine what's valid, what's not valid, technical expertise. But we do, as a council, have the authority and the right to have a vote of the majority of the council to ask the chair to send our technical people to that meeting. And start gathering information to affect our work. Well,
this is the public comment period, and you're correct. You do have the right to authorize with a majority with any positive votes. But I personally, and I'd be surprised if anybody else would, is going to base it off information that's not coming from our staff. So when you point to reports that are being produced by somebody else, and you want us to go down there and make public comment based upon somebody else's
report.
That's not
what I'm saying, Chairman. What I'm saying is to sit back and not have authorize your staff, our staff, to go investigate and to go attend the public hearing, gather as much information as they possibly can. And believe me, our technical experts go off the reports written by many people, not just the reports they just conjure up on their own investigation. They've loaded data that's been reported by tons of people. So they're experts. We're not asking them to make a policy decision. We're asking them to investigate the possibility of something that's going to be built that's going to affect water quality. It's not a big lift for them to go up and do some investigating.
And I thought we were in agreement moments ago with using our regional master plan as the data. And you did, in fact, point to an outside group and their report, us using that. I don't agree with that. I think we have enough technical data that's included in our regional master plan that we can utilize as significant points of interest to send to whatever the board is that's overseeing this for their public comment.
I think the key is what Mr. Zetich brought up. Is there going to be a conclusion from it? And whether or not we need to, because that is a policy decision by the council, and whether or not we need to say that we are opposed to these casinos going in because of the impact on the water resources in the Ramapo.
at face value, everything I've heard, I agree with you. We haven't done, we haven't reviewed it. So that's my point, is we have not reviewed it. So it's unfair for us to go have our staff go make comments on something without us approving that we haven't seen. We wouldn't allow that anywhere else. Where information's being moved forward without oversight from this body.
I trust when they look at the RMP, they're going to see that there are water resources that are vulnerable to those impacts.
The RMP is, that's where it's from. That's where everybody agreed.
It's the other outside information. Make a conclusion.
That's the difference.
And I don't know, do we need to come together again in order to let you do that, or how would that be accomplished in order to make sure that there's actually something put on the record that says, you know, we support or don't support?
I think you can make that motion right now.
Right now, it's not an agenda item, so it's not up for a vote. But regardless, I think we agreed already. A couple members over here, not on what we're going to do. If you somehow think we can get together and meet again to analyze the data, to send a more detailed report over, that's a different story. But at this point in time, it's data, public comment period, and we're going to supply the information that we have available to us within our regional master plan that is in review and submit that to them.
But there's not enough time to do that because it ends this at the end of this month, right? Public comment period. I just think that it's just common sense to know that if you're building a 1,000-room casino at the headwaters of the Ramapo River, that it's going to have some kind of effect on the river. And all the reports in the world are not going to change our minds. My mind is made up. It's going to affect it. I live probably within 5 miles of one of those proposed casinos, and I think it's just going to be a horrible situation. I certainly hope. I read two reports, one saying that they were going to get water from a reservoir and the other from wells. Now, if it's from wells, we're in trouble from where we live because we have very poor recharging aquifers, so it's going to kill us. So I would support a resolution or a motion that would be saying that we oppose this placement of these casinos and that close to the New Jersey border and to the Ramapo River.
Mr. Chairman, I have a suggestion. One thing that they could do, looking at the RMP, is say, this could not be built in the Highlands under the present Highlands Regional Master Plan because of the resources, if that's what indeed what we find in looking at that. And I suspect that we will find that because there's no new wastewater discharges in the preservation area. So this would not fly if it was on the New Jersey side of the border.
Hopefully this is all a moot point because I read this morning in the record, in the Berger record, that the Palisades Interstate Parkway system voted unanimously against placing an intersection for, not intersection, interchange for this casino. So that might just put them out of contention.
But hopefully still Genty, but not Caesars.
Correct. I'm talking about the one that's closest to.
I don't think any of us are necessarily that far apart on the position of this. It's based upon how we react with our votes. I'm not willing to just say, based upon anything, I'd like it to come from what our staff concludes from within our regional master plan, not anybody else's, or just because I don't want it there. So I think it has to be based on, as this body is, the Highlands Council. You should base it upon facts that come from within the Highlands regional master plan.
Can we authorize the staff to do a report and arrive at an opinion and then tell the board, and the board can then make the decision? Is there some way we can accomplish this?
Well, through
a public process?
I think so, too.
Pardon?
I thought we did that already.
No, but I mean in terms of coming to a decision, definitely saying that this would have a negative impact on the resources of the Highlands.
But we need the data first.
But I'm saying if they arrive at that, when they look at the data.
I despise gambling, so I'll oppose to this thing just because gambling is just a menace in society. and produces nothing positive.
I like gambling.
It's a depression. But on the other hand, I'm not prepared to vote to be against this project because of that personal opinion, because I haven't seen any data based upon what we're charged to do, objective, presented to us to this point, that leads me to believe that it does have an impact, negative or positive or neutral, on the rivers. So we need that data.
Well, that's
or the staff needs to review it, and then I can make a vote.
That's what I'm saying. Have the staff review it based on
how quickly
we already know in the regional.
We're having a little sidebar over here. Chris and I are kind of following your line of thought and yours about the regional master plan. We're kind of thinking maybe we could do a consistency determination.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it would be consistent
with our... That's a very good idea. Excellent.
And as far as the deadline at the end of the month, well, you know, so be it. But if we meet in October and we want to pass a resolution or whatever, I think the publicity that we would get by sending this still to them after the fact, I still think it will make an impact.
Well, I have a suggestion. We can submit the comments without a final vote of the conclusion for or against if the board does not feel that we can have another meeting. There won't be enough time to do that. We could submit them in time so they're on the record, and then we could solidify that with a vote in our October meeting in terms of saying whether or not we are for or against it.
Yeah, and I heard negative things that this might not be going forward anyway, but who knows?
But we don't know that.
We don't know
but,
that.
But the next meeting, I agree. I think, again, I don't think we're ever collectively that far apart on this idea. It's just how we're going to go about addressing it, and I think Kurt said it very well a moment ago. So I will work with Margaret on her suggestion there, a suggestion that came out of Eddie Mouse, and we'll get something in for public comment.
Good.
Second.
Thank you.
Can you get second?
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.